New friends, new opportunities, new partners. EG Tax.
And hi, everybody. This is Chris Fabian with Tiffany Fabian from EG Tax with our weekly podcast, Talking Taxes, Talking, See How We Can Help Save You Money. Kind of weird listening to a podcast on taxes, but there's a lot of cool information out there to help you save. And we're going to talk about capital assets and what it means for that.
Yeah, there's a lot to it. I mean, it seems simple, but, you know, we were just doing our radio show and there was a guy who called into the radio show and he said that his daughter was selling things on Facebook and they were some of her old clothes and her dresser. And so he wanted to know if she had to declare the items that she sold on Facebook. And so what did you tell him?
Well, did she make a profit?
Right.
And for personal items that you sell on eBay and Facebook and in a garage sale, if you're not making a profit, you don't pay tax on it. You don't get to claim the loss, but you don't have to pay tax on the profit. But if you are like a vintage store and you buy something for $2 and you sell it for $100, then you got to pay tax. But that's not as a capital asset. That's as a business. And you would have to do a Schedule C on that.
Right. So a lot of times we think of all the people in the summertime who have garage sales. And so generally they wouldn't have to do any Schedule D for those items in the garage sale because they don't have a profit motive, right?
Right, right. What we're talking about is stocks, cryptocurrency, houses, things like that that you would sell where the capital assets have two different, basically two tax brackets, where one is ordinary income, meaning you held it for less than a year.
Right.
Okay, so that gets taxed as ordinary income. So if you're in the 22% bracket, you're going to pay 22% tax on that gain. The other part is if you held it for more than a year, and you're in the 12% bracket or lower, you pay no tax on that gain.
Yep, that's right.
Right. And if you're in the 22% bracket up to the 34% bracket, you're going to pay 15% tax on it. And if you're in the top tax bracket at 37, you're going to pay 20% tax on it. That sounds very confusing.
It is. And so I'm going to also, we just talked about a radio show caller, but how about I was doing somebody's tax return the other day and it was just all incidental. She was like, oh yeah. So we sold my mom's house and the real estate agent, lawyer, said we don't have to do anything with our taxes because we made less than $50,000 each of us if we split it amongst all the heirs of the house. And so it was a house that she sold in a life estate and the mom actually was still alive while it was still remaining in the life estate. And I says, oh, well, unfortunately, you do have to put it on your tax return and you got ill advice. And so that happens often when the advice is miscued, right?
Right, right. I mean, don't go to your neighbor. Don't go to your boss. Don't go to your doctor. Call a tax professional and get the right answer.
Yeah, because there is two general things when you're looking at something like that. There's the stepped up basis that you can get when you inherit something, or if something is gifted to you, it goes back to the donor's original basis. And so in this situation, when they had the item in the life estate and the person hadn't passed away, it goes back to their original basis. And so that's where you get some favorability if you inherit an item versus if it's gifted to you.
Right, right. And a life estate, like Tiff was saying, with a house sold prior to death is a gift. It's not an inheritance. And that's the big difference from going back maybe till 1970 plus improvements to get a cost basis compared to an inherited stepped up value of what the house is worth today if the person were to pass away today. So one could be $70,000 going back that far, and the other one could be $300,000. So you sell the house for $300,000 on an inheritance, you pay no tax.
Now, what if the house was also in her husband's name, but he had sadly passed away 9 years earlier?
When was the house put in the life estate?
Right.
Was it prior to his death or was it after his death?
And so what if it was prior to his death?
Then there's nothing you can do with any type of a stepped up basis because the house was put in the life estate prior to death. So you got to go back and original cost plus improvements and then plus any improvements up to the date you sold it. And that's what the cost basis is, where if the house was put into... So we'll go back and we'll say the house, mom and dad, it was $60,000 they bought it for. They put $20,000 into it. So their basis is $80,000. Okay. They put it in a life estate. That's the basis for the house. Okay. But now the house was worth $80,000. Dad passed away and the house was now worth $200,000. Okay. Mom inherited dad's half, so she gets a $40,000, half of $80,000, plus $100,000 because she got the stepped up basis for dad's half. That's $100,000. So the basis for the life estate is $140,000. So that's a big difference than the $80,000.
Yeah, that's really confusing. Now, switching gears, what if the parent father had passed away and they inherited stock when the dad passed away?
You get the stepped up value.
Right.
So if going back to the house, let's not keep jumping. And now mom passed away later. So when dad died, the house was worth $200,000 and the basis in the life estate was $140,000. So if mom passes away and the house is worth $300,000, the kids get a stepped up basis for $300,000. They sell it for $300,000. There's no gain, no loss, okay, because mom passed away. But if mom sold it before she died at $300,000, they have to pay tax on the difference between $300,000 and $140,000. So that's a gain of $160,000. Not that mom will have to pay tax on. The kids, whoever are listed in the life estate, would have to pay tax on that $160,000.
Now, this example that we keep bantering back and forth, part of the proceeds they gave to mom. So does that enter into the picture at all? Does she have to do anything?
Mom only gets like 4% of the sale price. So since that was mom's house and the law is since 1998, you can make a profit for a single person of up to $250,000, not sale price, a profit of $250,000 on your principal residence. You pay no tax. So mom wouldn't have to pay tax on her 4% of the sale price. The children, again, would. So if mom is in good health prior to sale, mom may want to look at canceling the life estate and putting it back just in her name so there would be no tax owed. The only pitfall to that would be the Medicare side of things. That five-year look back starts again. So now mom sells it for $300,000. Medicare is going to look at that $300,000 for 5 years.
Yep.
So there's a yin and a yang to everything. You just got to look to see what's better and what's going to happen.
Yep. And then also, just going through our list here, don't forget if you sell a house or you sell stock, whatever you sell, when you calculate your tax, you can use the tax tables or you can use the Schedule D to compute your taxes, generally done on page 2 of the 1040 at the top. So don't forget if you have Schedule D transactions, it might behoove you to use the Schedule D computation to compute that tax versus the tax tables. Otherwise, you're going to pay extra taxes and you don't want to do that.
You know, and that's where it gets scary, very confusing because we just did our radio show. if you held it for less than a year, it's ordinary income.
Correct.
If you held it more than a year, that's when you would use that Schedule D worksheet, like you were saying, to figure out the tax. Because depending what income tax bracket you're in, depends on what capital gains rate you pay tax on. So it could be 0%, it could be 15%, or it could be 20%.
Correct.
So it gets confusing. And in the higher tax, but more income you go, don't forget, there's the special Medicare tax on earnings. And then there's also a special Medicare tax on capital gains.
Correct.
Once you go. So you really got to pay attention to taxes, your tax law, and go through to make sure there's you're not missing anything in favor for you. Or, I hate to say this, missing anything in favor of the IRS, because they will come back and get you for that one. If it's in favor of you, they're not going to say, hey, you made a mistake. Here's a check.
Yeah. Now, I was doing some young person's tax return, and they had capital gains of like $15,000. And so they were in the 15% tax bracket. So they paid zero. It was long term on the federal. But now New York State, Chris, they had owed like $600. So New York State gives you no favorable status, whereas you do find it on the other ones.
Right.
Now, I don't know about the state that you live in, but New York State gives you no favorable status, as does the federal. And so you really want to pay attention to that.
Right. Yeah. Don't forget about your states, because they'll want their portion of everything too. You know, and this also goes, we're from New York. We're from Buffalo, New York, which is right next to Canada. And we have a lot of our clients who own houses in Canada. And selling a house in Canada is a very tricky on your U.S. return. So if you're somebody who's doing that, give us a call. We know how to do it, because you get a special, there's a special tax credit. It's not just as simple as using the 1116 and you get dollar for dollar. You don't. Okay. There's other calculations you have to do for that. So if your house is in Florida and you're a New York resident, guess what? New York's going to want the share of that as well, even though it's not in New York, but different states have different rules. So you really got to check your states.
And what were you going to say?
I said another big investment is cryptocurrency.
Oh, that's where I was going.
Yeah.
And cryptocurrency, if you sell it, it would be just like the other things you're talking about, going on a Schedule D. However, there's a little caveat for cryptocurrency. If you're using it to buy something, for instance, I hate to say this, but in Ukraine, they're using cryptocurrency to get weapons, because probably their currency is having problems right now. And so if you use cryptocurrency to buy items, then what do you do with it?
Then that counts as a business. So you have your basis in the cryptocurrency, we'll say, is $20,000. Okay. You go and you find a car you like, either the person says, oh, you have crypto? I take crypto. And the car, you know, is worth $40,000, and crypto just happened to be worth $40,000 that day. You give them your crypto for the car. Okay. That profit, that $20,000, counts as ordinary income on a Schedule C, plus you have to pay self-employment tax on that $20,000 as well. So you got to pay income tax and self-employment tax.
Yikes.
You know, so crypto can be a little confusing, especially with all the transactions. I see people, and I still don't understand why, they buy 30 cents at a time. I mean, just buy $100. Save your money. Buy $100. You know, make it simple. But that's what they're doing with crypto. And the new thing is digital technology pictures. You can buy a digital picture. You have the right. This is your new investment. I mean, it sounds very sketchy to me. You know, we're looking at a computer or monitor now that has a green neon tent on it. Mm-hmm. Somebody could buy that picture.
Yeah,
as an investment.
I know that when I'm doing marketing, I use a website to buy digital pictures.
Right. Well, that's a physical, but we're talking like in a movie, you can just buy that one image.
No. Well, that's a lot
really
of images.
Really weird. Yeah, that's a lot of images for sale. So
a lot of images for sale. Don't forget, when you're looking at your 1099 DIV statement, that you might pick up some 199A, which is some potential qualified business deductions. And so that goes on an 8915.
95.
9089. We'll do the form again. What form?
8995.
8995. That's right. And so don't forget to deduct the 199A on the dividend line on the 8995. And so that can privy you to the 20% credit that will be reducing your income on page one of the 1040 at the bottom. Now, the 199 or the QBI is something that you'll also find the 199 on K-1s. So if you have a K-1 that was produced from a partnership or an S-Corp, for instance, you're going to take that 199A and you're also going to transfer that to the 8995 as well. Also, I was thinking if you're a landlord and this is a business and your profit is something.
This is your only income.
This is your only income. And so you're in the business with your rental as a landlord to make money, then if there's a profit, that is also a possible 199A that would flow over to that 8995 as well. And so don't forget to look on your dividend statements. There's a lot of people that scratch their head when they see the 199A and they don't know what it is. And also when you're looking at the dividend statement, there's some foreign taxes that you can pay because they can invest in Canada. They can invest in Italy. And so it's going to generate some foreign taxes that you're going to pay. And there's a credit. It's done on the 1116. And you could use a simplified version often and deduct the amount of taxes that you pay on that dividend on the form. And so don't forget to do that as well.
Right, right.
You could also deduct taxes paid if you wanted to on the itemized deduction, but so many people are not itemizing.
It's usually better to do it on the 1116.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the limit, if you do, you know, we always say harvest your losses. Use your losses to offset your gains, you know, because you're going to pay, if you are in the category of paying 15% taxes on your gains, if you have losses out there, sell them to offset that gain so then you're not paying tax.
Yeah, I was with two clients this year and they had large sales of like $25,000 and there were no losers. And I said to them, I wish your broker would have forewarned you because they owed a lot more money this year. But again, it was a really good year, 2021, in the market. And so they might not have had any losers that they could have taken advantage of. You got to think that the person who's in charge of their brokerage, you know, knew to do that, right, Chris?
He would think a lot of people would know a lot of in positions, lawyers,
yeah,
brokers, you know. But it's very important, though, to keep track of your cost basis because before 2010, brokers didn't have to. Some did, some didn't. And I hate that excuse. Well, we never had to, so we didn't do it. Mm-hmm. That's just an excuse. If that's your client and you had your client that long, you should have the cost basis. But that helps pay lower taxes. If you don't know a cost basis, your cost basis you have to report on your tax return is zero.
Yeah. Yep.
Which means you're going to pay tax on the wholesale price. So it could be worth it to do your homework and investigate it.
Yeah, there's somebody that had a $60,000 sale. It was a brand new person who was referred to me. And we contacted the broker and asked what the basis was. And the broker told us that the basis was zero. And it just about broke my heart. But again, prior to 2010, they didn't have to keep track of the basis. And so this person was put in that awkward position where they had to put zero and they owed a lot of money. And so that wasn't a really good thing.
And a lot of times we see people who like the MetLife stock, the Prudential stock. There's another one I'm missing. The demutualization that the insurance companies did when they became public. They think, oh, I didn't pay for the stock. I don't have a cost basis. Right. But you do. It's the original IPO of the stocks. Mm-hmm. And that will save you a little bit of money. I know right now the insurance companies are doing really good. But look up your IPO of MetLife. I think it was $14.25. Prudential might have been $24. You know, so, but it, you know, you have 100 shares. That's a lot of cost basis.
Yeah. And I want to reiterate something. So, for instance, that person who had that $60,000 gain, you know how we always say you're only limited to $3,000 a year? Now, if that person had losers of $70,000, it's not just $3,000 a year. You can use the $70,000 loss to sop up that gain and then just take $3,000 over. So don't forget that it's not just $3,000. It's also you can negate the gain with your losers.
Your net, you're only allowed $3,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The key word there is your net. Okay.
And marching down our list, what if somebody has an antique car, Chris, or an antique dress, and they sell that and it's a collectible? What is that taxed at?
That's taxed at 28%.
Gulp.
Yeah, not the 0%, the 15%, the 20%. It's 28%. So if you have Babe Ruth's autographed rookie card, okay, if you sell it, that's going to be at 28%. If you're the, I don't want to use this word, sucker, who bought Tom Brady's last touchdown football before he retired, and you paid that $500,000, and you're thinking you're going to sell it for $1 million, but now he's back. you know, that's a collectible. That's going to get taxed at 28%. So you got to look at what it is and what it is. A stamp collector, a coin collector, you know, those are 28% items that you're going to pay tax on the gain.
Yeah. So what if, so that person who got Tom Brady's football and then they sell it and they sell it at a loss, but what if they sell it to a family member? Are they allowed to take the loss?
No. When you sell an item to a family member, no loss is deductible.
Because that's that arm's length transaction that we refer
exactly.
to. And so you want to make sure that you pay attention who it is that you sell the item to, because you want to make sure it's more than an arm's length transaction. And so pay attention to that. Now, you know, we talk about broker statement. I have a lot of broker statements that have a W, and then right next to it, it reduces the amount of allowable loss. Why is that?
Because a wash sale is you bought it within 30 days of selling it for a loss. So the government says, no, you're not allowed that loss until you totally sell that stock for more than 30 days. So if you have a 1099 B and you see a W, that means a wash sale. Either you sold a stock and bought it back within 30 days or your broker did.
And so my client said, can't we just ignore that? The IRS won't catch it.
Nope, because they will catch it. It's on the 1099-B.
Yeah, it'll just take them a little while. And so then interest and penalty will accrue.
Right. Well, that's it for this week. If you have questions out there, you're listening to us, give us a call at 716-632-7886. That was 716-632-7886. We're here all the time to help you. You can go to our website at egtax.com and ask questions that way. Until our next podcast, we'll see you later. Have a great week, guys. Bye-bye.
New opportunities, new partners.